The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder what God wants us to do with this whole pandemic thing. Some say open up the country. Others say it's too soon. Well, my friend, if you're asking about God, I have no prophecy from God, but the Bible does talk a lot about the value of wisdom. And in the Bible, God also tells us to remember things because there's wisdom when we recollect how far we've come and see the context of it. First, they told us that unless we had serious preconditions, only people above 70 years of age were in danger of losing their lives. For others, it may not be much worse than a mild case of the flu or a bad cold. Many will not even feel symptoms at all. Okay, good reasons to protect our senior citizens, but for everyone else, nothing to worry about. Yeah, you know, if you fall within that precarious age or risk factor, just be careful. So long as you keep yourselves isolated, there will be no problem, just for a while. Just until we can get this thing under control. Then retirement homes made the decision on behalf of its residents. They were ordered not to leave the premises. In time, the decision was out of the hands of the retirement communities. It became a matter of executive order in many places. After that, our education increased. Now, whoa and behold, the risk age is actually 65 and older. Oh, and well, it can sometimes be real nasty and life-threatening, even in your 50s or 40s, but certainly not in your 30s, unless it is. Because, you see, what we're trying to say is a few serious cases have popped up with that age bracket, too, but children can't get this. Children can't get this. Probably not. Well, maybe they can, but they shouldn't feel symptoms, and since they could still be carriers, keep them away from grandma and grandpa. Meanwhile, the general instructions for being out in public were ever so helpful. Simple, too. A piece of cake. Just wash your hands, they say with a smile. Wash your hands after shaking hands with another. Oh, and don't put your hands near your mouth or eyes. Don't do that after shaking hands because it is through the mouth or eyes that you can contract the disease. Got it. Roger, just wash my hands and I won't catch this. Easy peasy. Who couldn't follow those simple, reasonable suggestions? But wait, there's more. Now it changes to, well, actually, don't shake hands at all. Instead, that fun but polite elbow bump will be sufficient. Oh, and don't worry about surfaces, just people. This thing doesn't live on surfaces. At least not long enough that we should be concerned. At least as far as we know. Next, I'll give you three guesses and the first two don't count. Yes, sweet Virginia, we heard that COVID-19 actually can live on surfaces longer than we first thought. Could be hours and hours upon hours, and maybe even upon hours, according to some doctors. But there's no need to wear a mask. In fact, we strongly urge you not to wear a mask unless you're infected, because people who aren't infected don't need them. Doctors need them to treat infected people, but nobody else needs them. Besides, the average yokel doesn't know how to wear masks. They touch them too much. They adjust them too much. They take them off. They scratch themselves, which means the eyes and the mouth are in danger again. Later, hey, that elbow bump thing isn't going to work either. Instead, we must ask you to socially distance yourselves by staying 6 feet apart in the stores or the workplaces. Throughout these ever-morphing tips, the federal government task force is talking in terms of guidelines. States and cities taking their cues from Washington also issue guidelines. But it didn't take long for that to change as well. In many places, what started as a guideline one day became an executive order the next day. Gary Guideline and his cousin Danny Decree continued to watch our populace like hawks, wondering what else they could do to disrupt the normal in order to save more lives. In no time at all, they came up with this fun little gem. No gatherings of more than 35. And of course, within those gatherings, social distance yourselves. That's 6 feet apart, bucko. 5.5 won't cut it. Still later. Well, actually, we just assume you don't have gatherings at all. Instead, everyone should stay at home, no matter what age you are. Because you never know if you're a carrier. So even if you feel good, even if you feel great, stay home. Businesses that could have their people work at home did so. Businesses that could not work from home were shut down or severely curtailed. Stores and other essential services were allowed to stay open so long as people practiced social distancing 6 feet apart. Churches were told to stop meeting if they had over 35 people. Then they were told to stop meeting, period. Many said it didn't matter. After all, we can meet on Zoom. Some people tried drive-in church services. They were ticketed and threatened with arrest. By now, it became clear that you could be a lot farther than 6 feet apart and still be in trouble. People were arrested on beaches, even if they were the only one on the beach. People were commanded to vacate parks, refrain from riding horses on a horse trail. They were pulled over by police and hassled if taking a drive, unless the car was headed toward an essential service, even if it was one person in the car. In the meantime, we were assured that probably, hopefully, maybe, this would only last 15 days. You bet! The 15-day plan, we can do this, right? Yeah, we can do that! Then it became 30 days until the end of April. The important thing was to flatten the curve. Flatten the curve. Flatten the curve. Again, these are guidelines from Washington, but the local states and municipalities keep adding teeth, extremely sharp teeth. In Michigan, people were told that they could buy food in one part of the store, but furniture and gardening sections in the other part of the store would be closed. They were also told that if they owned two homes in the state, they could not drive from one to the other. Heck, they weren't even allowed to visit other family members. Sounds like we hit rock bottom at this point. It wasn't rock bottom. Not even close. The very same professionals who assured us repeatedly and emphatically that we did not need masks decided to revisit the subject. Say, you know what? We strongly suggested you wear a mask after all. We got new information. But also, we were always concerned because we were afraid we would run out of masks for our doctors. Those are both valid reasons, so just go with the one that makes the most sense. Yeah, wear the mask, but also be sure to socially distance. The whole mask deal ends up confusing people. In some places, it's requested. In other places, it's required. And in still other places, people get arrested for not wearing masks. Meanwhile, those previously arrested for real crimes like rape are released from jail for the exact same reason, social distancing. In the midst of this seemingly endless fog, one or two questions occasionally surface, much like the child who notices the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. But if we're socially distancing 6 feet apart, why do we need a mask? And conversely, if we're wearing a mask, why do we need to socially distance? Or let's say we accept both the mask and the 6 feet social distance thing. If essential services can stay open with masks and social distancing, why can't all other businesses just promise to do the same and keep themselves 6 feet apart? Here's another question. If fast food restaurants, liquor stores, and marijuana stores can have drive-through, why can't churches have drive-through? Another question, aren't people 6 feet apart if they are alone in their cars? Aren't people more than 6 feet apart taking a drive by themselves or being the only surfer on the beach? And if they are alone in their cars, why do they have to wear masks? And if they are going for a walk around the block, why do they have to wear masks? Meanwhile, another part of the story had changed without us even remembering exactly where on the timeline. Now we're hearing this virus could be in the air. And when we get home from the store, we should not only wash our hands and throw out our grocery bags, we should strip down to the garage, come inside, and take a shower. That still might not be enough, according to the World Health Organization. Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them in a safe and dignified manner. Oh, I gotcha. Now they will invade your home, but only in a dignified manner. Thank goodness for that, at least. Granted, WHO regulations are not binding on our country, but how many American politicians are in bed with WHO and condemn criticism of WHO as though the organization were a sacrament? Will there be more? Of course there will be more! Other fun ideas are in the works. Ideas such as designing drones to roam the sky and read our body temperature to see if we might be needing special isolation and or to see if we are violating whatever shelter-in-place mandate might be in effect in that particular city or state. How about this one? Placing a track on our cell phones to see if we're traveling to any place other than an essential service. Again, only to protect our health. And while rules multiply faster than the virus itself, the goalpost continues to move. Now, as we approach May, some states are increasing their lockdown measures, doubling down instead of lightening up. Others are opening up, but slowly, slowly, ever so slowly. Making it fairly clear that phrases such as social distancing are going to be with us for a very long time. So will government-regulated restaurants, theaters, planes, churches. Oh, wait! Sorry, almost forgot. Come fall, there will likely be a fresh outbreak of COVID-19, they tell us. What then? Return to shelter in place? Small and large businesses closing down again? Church services resuming again? But what about next winter, flu season, same dong and dance? Some politicians are saying we cannot open up until we develop a vaccine. Gee, Wally, I thought it was about flattening the curve. No, whoever said anything about a flattened curve, a vaccine, silly. Well, not to be outdone, other politicians have even said we must wait for the disease to become completely eradicated. Reality check. We may never develop a vaccine. The disease may never be eradicated. And even those optimistic doctors who see it in the horizon go out of their way every night on the news to assure us that one way or the other, it will not happen anytime soon. I know, we've heard it day after day. All guidelines are based on the information we had at the time. When the information changes, we have to change the guidelines. So be it. I don't blame President Trump or his medical task force for making mistakes. I don't blame any of the sincere doctors. I both understand and accept that information gets challenged in the face of new data. But my friends, this information does not simply change. It goes back and forth. It contradicts. Every time a potential healing agent drug is given a favorable report, someone else says it didn't test well. This drug works. No, it doesn't work. Yeah, well, it worked here. Or how about this one? Once you get over coronavirus, you develop an immunity and will use that plasma to make a remedy full of natural antibodies. Well, maybe not, because maybe those who recovered can get it again. We're really not actually sure. We hear of states who flattened the curve by obeying all the shutdown rules. Other states flattened the curve without the shutdowns. Still others, despite the flattened curve, are in no great hurry to let people to go back to work. We heard originally that this disease was going to be gargantuan in the amount of deaths it produced. Now we hear that the disease probably came to America sooner than we think, probably back in December, that far more people have had it than we realize, which means that these people apparently didn't know they had it, and if they didn't know they had it, it could only have been a mild case if they were feeling anything at all, and they must be over it by now. As the amount of cases goes up, the amount of death percentages goes down, and the latest estimates, once we figure out how many actually had it, if we had any, we're now less than 1%. Other studies suggest the disease will spread no matter what we do, but also run its course quickly if we don't stretch it out with all the sheltering. Okay, nobody is sure. Medical science is not perfect. Learning about a virus can be a long, tumultuous process. Again, fine. Again, we get it. But here's the bottom line. If we can admit that we are unsure about the virus, we must also admit that it was a mistake to close down our entire country while we were trying to figure it out. It's not like we haven't had viruses without vaccines before. While we waited with bated breath for the elusive, perfect solution, the economy was decimated. 27 million jobless claims. 1 in 4 businesses 2 months or less away from closing permanently as of April 3rd. How much has that changed in a month? But Bob, what else can we do? Should we really be talking about rights and jobs when lives are at stake? What is the balance? What is the solution? The balance, quite simply, is realizing that this is not a choice between the economy on one side and human lives on the other side. Neither is it a choice between our Constitution on one side and human lives on the other side. Human lives will be lost on both sides. I say this quite soberly, quite measuredly. I myself am over 65. I've told you this. I also have asthma, one of the preconditions. Never think for a moment that I do not take COVID-19 seriously. I am very aware that the figure of under 1% deaths is no consolation to a grieving family. Yes, of course, even one life is one too many. But ladies and gentlemen, lives are being lost on the other side too. It sounds so easy to simply obey our physicians and civil servants who supposedly have nothing but our goodwill in mind. Yeah, all we have to do is stay at home and watch Netflix. That's not so hard, is it? Yeah, well, people who lost their jobs can't afford Netflix. They can't afford food and rent either. As for people who can work at home on their computer over the internet, that sounds great. So remember that schools are closed down too, and daycare centers. How are parents supposed to watch their kids and homeschool their kids and work at their careers at the same time? What about abusive parents? What about abusive spouses? That's not exactly a blissful shelter-in-place arrangement. Depression and suicide are on the rise during this, not to mention the question of whether or not there will be any economy to return to at all when we finally get released to the great outdoors. We've seen what happens in countries whose economies crash, putting aside the obvious such as higher poverty, rise of crime, vandalism, shortage of police protection. There's also the stress factor of people suddenly out of work, wondering how they will feed their own families. This observation is not an antithesis to medical concern. The medical community has been telling us for years how often stress contributes to serious illness. Speaking of the medical community, another obvious observation. The economy of the medical community itself is affected every bit as much when the surrounding economy crashes. The medical community does not exist in isolation. When the medical business is at risk, everyone's health is at risk. Doctors themselves are out of work right now. Did you know that? Many of them are put on furlough. While coronavirus has sucked all the oxygen out of the country, Americans with other health challenges have been left out in the cold. To make room for the much anticipated but seldom realized COVID-19 patients, hospitals were emptied and cleared. States ordered the discontinuation of non-essential procedures. Now, you want to know what a non-essential procedure is? Well, it's not just having a canker sore removed or having a toenail removed. They include on the list of non-essential hip replacements, cancer screening, biopsies for tumors, treatments for those with heart disease or strokes, blood pressure monitoring. They say 80% of brain surgery cases have been temporarily suspended. At the end of the day, we don't know how many will die of coronavirus. Again, the stats suggest that, that when all said and done, it'll be less than 1%. Could the stats prove to be wrong in time? Yes, again, it's an unknown virus. But here's what is not unknown. We know what the obliteration of the economy leads to. We know politicians, once given a taste of unchecked power, do not give it back easily. They enthusiastically subscribe to the adage, never let a good crisis go to waste. Many of them have openly, shamelessly admitted this. They do so in front of cameras. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is news. How many human lives are you willing to sacrifice for the sake of the economy? That's how the question always goes. Tonight, I want to put that question right back in the other direction. How many lives are you willing to sacrifice if we don't do away with these draconian measures, allow people to leave their homes and go back to work, And along with the lives, how many dreams and livelihoods are you willing to see go up in smoke? How much rationed health care would you like to see for the rest of your lives? How much more of our Constitution would you like to see violated? How many freedoms are you willing to give up simply because we have a virus without a vaccine? So much for the balance. Here's the solution. We have two choices. Solution one, we can throw up our hands and continue to go along with the shutdown, social distancing, shelter-in-place orders, knowing full well our economy and former way of life will be completely destroyed, and our Constitution will no longer be worth the paper it is printed on, less valuable than the toilet paper people stand in long lines for. Or solution two, the doctors and government can treat us like adults. They can just say, if you are at risk, be careful, maybe stay at home. You can go where you want, but go at your own risk. Meanwhile, washing hands and using good hygiene is always a good idea. But remember, life is always going to include risk. If you run a business or church or airline, you can arrange seating any way you want. Just understand that some people will choose to go to a place that might be better spaced than yours. Your choice, their choice. We cannot guarantee how many lives might be lost due to COVID-19 if we open the country back up immediately, but we do know this. A lot more lives will be lost if we don't open up. Our quality of life and Constitution will also be gone with the dust if we don't allow people the right to travel, vacation, worship, assemble, and shop in the manner they choose. And if you disagree with that, take it up with our forefathers. Our Constitution does not have a coronavirus clause. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church.
Sweet, beautiful music in the midst of all that's going on. Nice tension breaker. You're listening to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined again, as we are at least once a month, by National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, thanks for having me on again. Well, I got nothing.
Mike Friedenberg with nothing. I believe that.
I got nothing because you just did it all, Bob. And
Well, what I wanted to do was give a context. What you're very good at is details and some snapshots along the way.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. So I actually do have a few details, but honestly, you did hit at a high level pretty much everything.
I just thought if people could remember how much this has changed. I think people forget. We kind of incrementally, like the burning or the boiling frog, a degree at a time, we just kind of accept new things. And if we remember where it started and where it ended, and it's only been about 2.5 months. Look how much has changed in 2.5 months.
Yeah, it has changed a lot. What I want to talk about is the way this has been communicated to the American public and the effect it has had, this whole pandemic crisis. And I do understand there was data uncertainty, but there was a lot of information, even from the beginning, that our public health officials, and I'm talking about Fauci and Birx and other people, knew was likely. They couldn't say for sure, but they knew it was likely. And yet we've just heard one side of the thing. And everything we've heard has been to create a sense of fear in the American public to create compliance. We have not heard anything that would help counter that fear. And really, when you give statistics and facts and you don't give context, you are effectively lying. And so I personally believe the American public has been lied to, either by lies of omission primarily, but there's been some outright lies of commission. For example, from the very beginning, face masks do work. Not all of them work as well as the N95, but they have some effect if properly used.
And remember how they gave us two reasons? They said, well, we got new information, but they also said, well, we didn't want you to use them because we wanted to save them for our doctors. Both of those reasons could not be true. And they had the gall to float both of those reasons at the same time.
Oh, yeah, they did. So, here's the fact is, there's a whole wide variety of face masks that will provide some protection. But if you're working in a hospital ward with minute particles of the virus floating around, then yes, you want the NV95. Pretty much everywhere else, other masks are going to work. That was a lie when they said they wouldn't work. So now we're wearing masks and they're telling us use anything. Throw a bandana over your face. Take some old underwear, put it over your face. And it's all great.
And when we're all by ourselves in the car, what the heck's the point of the mask? It makes no sense.
No. So this narrative has been created by, I'm going to say, well-intentioned, well-meaning health officials, medical professionals, who want us to do what they want us to do. They wanted us to shelter in place. They wanted us to follow the provisions. Now, this has never been done before, and I can't.
It's almost like a doctor's dream in some
way. Well, it is.
Ways.
But they don't
care about the economy. I shouldn't say they don't care. They're not focused on the economy.
They don't focus on it. They have a focus, being in the medical community, of saving lives, and that's what they see. They have a much narrower perspective. Their judgment is partially impaired because of that. They don't see the full big picture, like you were talking about, the downside of the shutdown. And so they should not be the ones making the final decision. They should be. Now, President Trump has put in place, and I'm going to emphasize this, voluntary guidelines.
Yeah, there's a big I do see a big difference between guideline and what our insane states are doing.
Now, once the federal government puts in place those voluntary guidelines, it does create a lot of pressure for people to look at them very seriously and do something about them. But let's also, another thing to look at is President Trump has vigorously defended the states that said, hey, these specific guidelines, we don't need them all. We're going to go our way. He has defended them. So just think about how it would be if we had a Democrat president. They wouldn't have been voluntary. They would have been mandatory.
No, our governors are telling us what a Democratic president would be. And we had a couple of states, like it was North Dakota or South Dakota, a few that—
Seven.
That didn't do a lot of this, and Trump was on their side.
Yeah, and the other thing that I want to say in defense of the president, he's been far from perfect. This is the kind of crisis that the off-the-cuff, ad hoc communication style sometimes does not work too well for. So there's been times when him working from prepared statements would have been better. But with that said, I truly believe that he put in place the minimum measures necessary to prevent from not only being impeached, but being removed from office. And I mean, literally, it could have been a 2-week period. Impeachment immediately in the House and terrified.
Well, and they're planning. They're going to impeach him over this again anyway.
But he would have been
gone. No matter what he did.
Now, let's say that happened. Let's say he hadn't acted and said, listen, we're going to leave it up to the states completely. So he gets removed. Who's next in line?
Pence.
Okay. Now, Pence probably would have gone along with
it. Well, last week we had a horror picture play on this show about who's next in line after Pence.
Well, who's after Pence?
That's Nancy Pelosi.
Okay.
And we played Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho.
Well, so,
celebrating
so,
that.
And I don't believe this is an exaggeration now. So let's talk about why I don't believe this is an exaggeration. 2 days ago, the Los Angeles Times did a poll. And these polls are right in line with what we've seen throughout the country. And you can argue about, are they up and down 3 or 4%? Are they completely accurate? I believe that generally they represent the sense of the country. So, according to a new survey conducted by the Los Angeles Times 2 days ago, 75% of Californians say they understand and accept the state's coronavirus restrictions. 75%, Bob.
Wow. I'm guessing you and I are in part of that 75%,
no.
Nick.
Among those polls, 75% want the order to continue as long as it's needed, according to the California Healthcare Foundation.
Which means as long as Governor Newsom decides it based on what side of the bed he gets out of.
Only 11% want to stop the stay-at-home order, while 13% had no opinion. Now, among low-income residents, this is kind of funny, support was even stronger. 78% support the stay-at-home, and only 3% oppose it.
Of course, because the Democrats keep talking about all the free money.
Well, they've been getting, and the amount of money they've been getting is actually enough to cover.
And Newsom's giving $500 apiece to all illegal immigrants, which tells us he knows where they all are and who they all are.
So this was based upon a survey of 1,000 people, plus or minus 3.1%. I know that, you know, no surveys can be manipulated, but this survey is in sync with surveys throughout the country over this entire period. Another survey done on Morning Consult found, and this was done, you know, on the 15th of April, 80% support the social distance measures in place. And here's what's going to be even more mind-boggling. Okay. So in general, throughout the country, at a very general level, governors are getting a 72% approval rate for how they're handling the crisis. 21% disapprove. President Trump's at 46% how he's handling the case and 49% approving. Disapproving. So the governors...
I thought originally he was getting good marks
handling. He started at about 20
They're
points.
All infatuated with Cuomo now, aren't they?
Well, actually, Cuomo and our governor. He's, in fact, here's something that's...
Yeah, there are a couple of really great guys.
Now, Bob, these are the statistics I think that if you've ever been shot by a statistic, this is going to shock you. Prior to the coronavirus, Governor Newsom was running at 42% approval. Just take a broad guess what his approval rating is now, right now.
Oh, I would guess it could be up to the 70s or 80s by now.
83%, Bob. That's not how he's handling the coronavirus. People have loved by the, and what you see, it's not 100%, but there's a strong correlation. The stronger, more restrictive, the more constitutional rights have been stripped from people, the more they've approved.
And the gall of the man, he declares this a sanctuary state, tells Trump essentially to go you know where. Then he asked for all this federal aid, and while he's getting it, he thanks Trump, and meanwhile he's going to give money to these illegal immigrants and disobey the federal law again.
Okay.
It just makes your head spin.
So that was a plus 41% jump for implementing strict, some people might call it draconian measures.
I would call them draconian measures.
Okay, well, now Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, running at 47% prior to the coronavirus. His handling or mishandling, I mean, he obviously, there was things he could have done to prepare better of a state.
Yeah, not give all that money to Green New Deals, right? and use it for the hospitals.
Bob, nobody cares about that because he's been strong since then.
Yeah, he's strong because of personality.
He's been protecting people.
And he was on every morning. Trump was on every morning. He decided to come on.
Instead of going down in popularity, he went up. He's now sitting at 79% overall approval rating. So, Bob, my point of this...
Thank goodness nobody likes de Blasio still.
Probably not. I don't know.
He's still going down.
Now, I am going to give you that's generally the trend in the country. However, in Arkansas, a little bit more positive data. Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, he was one of the seven states that just did not fully implement the guidelines.
Right.
So he was running at 58% before the coronavirus. And since then, he's bopped up to 80%. So he plus 22. However, sadly, Ron DeSantis, who was incredibly popular in Florida. Yes.
Because of that thing with the spring break people on the beach.
He dropped 7% because he's not doing enough to combat it. So what this tells you, Bob, is that the American public is very frightened. Very frightened by the coronavirus.
And politicians salivate when the populace gets frightened because they can bring about more of these horrible laws.
And when you look at break down the polls, you're looking at 30% Republicans supporting this, 90% Democrats and 70% supporting this. That 70% in that number, that number is people that Trump cannot win re-election without.
So much for people thinking it's a shoo-in that Trump will beat Biden. Biden can be the blithering idiot that he is, and he is, and it's not going to matter, Mike. It's not going to matter.
I wouldn't say it's no chance at all. I think he's still got a very good chance. But anybody that thinks because the Democrats have been complete idiots because of the crazy things they've done, because they have a lousy candidate, that means that Trump should and Trump's performance says he should walk away with this. But because of a hostile media that has constantly destroyed him over the last 5 years, he has, I believe, in recent history, we are now fighting over the smallest number of voters than we've ever fought over. In other words, there's people highly committed to not voting for Trump no matter what, people highly committed to voting for Trump no matter what, and the smallest number that we're now fighting over to win that election.
You know what, Mike? I understand why Trump did what he did, but now he should go back to his original instincts. He should get rid of Fauci. He should just say, you know, the usual. He did a great job. He needs to open up the economy, not stages at a time, completely. The Democrats can bellyache all they want. They're going to do that anyway. But if he brings the economy back and jobs back, if it's even possible at this point, he might go back to
however,
where he was.
Bob, if he were to do that, did you just hear what I said about the polling?
Yes. But if the economy goes, the economy
he
was.
He won't survive long, Bob. He won't survive long enough to be around to do the polling.
But the Democrats' strategy has been shame Trump into not restarting the economy. Right. I guarantee you in the fall, their talking points are going to be Trump tanks the economy.
Of course. But Bob, he's rolled out a 3-stage plan that the medical profession, healthcare professionals are solidly behind. Now,
and by the time we get to stage 3, it'll be fall, and the coronavirus will break out again. And it almost makes you wonder if they didn't plan it that way.
If he doesn't keep those guidelines in place, if he were to move those tomorrow, within 2 weeks, you'd have Pence sitting there as president, Bob. That's what the polling tells you, Bob. The politicians here, the Republicans, senators are very much aware of this. How long would it take for the Democrats to vote to impeach Bob? Yeah, but, let me ask you that question.
It wouldn't take long, but Mike, I believe they're going to do that anyway. I think if he at least does what he believes is right, he'll recapture his base. He may have lost a lot of his base when they lost the jobs that he gave them. And no matter what he does, they're going to call him Hitler. How worse could it get? He needs to just do the right thing.
He'll be out of office in 2 weeks.
He's going to be out of office in a month or two, if he doesn't, I don't know a timeline. They're planning on impeaching him again over this. I'm not saying they'll succeed, but Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi, they're drawing up the papers. They're ready to go at it again.
I believe that he can survive this because he has to play the
game. Let's say he keeps going along with this and keeps playing this game. Playing the game has been destroying our country. So how does he play the game and then come fall get reelected?
Okay,
tell me how he does that.
First of all, states are starting to reopen. The economy is going to start to come back. Now, at the same time, I mentioned these poll results, but these poll results are not based upon reality. They're not. They're based upon a fear narrative that was pumped down their throats by the healthcare officials who really felt the best thing to do was
the solution is to somehow counter the fear.
Right.
How do we do that?
We have now. That is starting to happen. You start to see cracks appear. For example, something that my wife mentioned to me the other day is a couple of physicians in Kern County. And one of them, I think, was Dr. Dan Erickson. Even before we had the first confirmed case of COVID in the country, he saw what was happening in the world and in China, and he purchased a whole bunch of tests so he could do his own testing. He's done 5,000 tests since then, and he's treated several hundred cases. So this guy is an expert on COVID. He did a big press conference yesterday, come out saying, listen, this is not that much difference in the flu. The damage we're doing to people's lives and civil rights is far greater than what the COVID virus is doing right now. You're starting to see these cracks.
Israeli doctors are saying a lot of that same stuff.
Right. Then we have Sweden. Sweden, who did not.
Yeah, they did a really good job.
And it's not like they didn't do anything.
Without tyrannizing the
people. But they did not do it a tyrannical
way. They did a few sensible things.
People voluntarily did things there. And you know what? They're running very similar to us without these tyrannical things. So there's that. What we've got to hope and keep doing is getting the data out there to bring the numbers around on the general population. Because right now, with these poll numbers, there's only a few Republican senators that are going to die on their sword on this. They look at those poll numbers, and that's why Gavin Newsom and all these public health officials, like recently, and I'll talk about this in more detail, we now have going into effect here in San Diego County, starting May 1st, a new health care provision that makes it mandatory once you leave your house to wear a face mask. Now, I was talking with
But now I heard they're also opening up the beaches. So they're doing both. They're opening up some of the beaches. And now what? People have to go to the beach with a mask?
Yes, actually. That's true, Bob. Now, I think they'd let you take it off when you're serving.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Governor.
Okay, so my point is, as long as these numbers sit up at these levels, these fear-induced levels by people that, you know, and what? How can you? I mean, listen, Bob. Every night, what you see is the devastation of COVID. And it's running, what, close to 45,000 people
And they now? Don't, they, what you don't see with the numbers of cases and numbers of deaths is the numbers of recoveries. That's why I go to my Facebook page every night and I put up the recovery numbers. And of course, since there's so many people they're saying that probably had this thing and got over it that we haven't tested, those recovery numbers are really a lot higher than we think. But even what we know, they're very high.
So, and yes, and the other thing that they, by lies of omission, and that's throughout the whole Trump presidency, lies of omission have
been the most damaging. What do you think is the motivation of the doctors to do lies of omission? Do you think they've had an agenda, or do you think they're just really being sincere?
Bob, it's so overwhelmingly one way. I believe that they've actually consulted with people on how to create the narrative to create compliance. So what they've done is, you've heard of the fear of unknown, right?
Yes.
So from the very beginning, remember when Trump tried to compare the coronavirus to the flu and he was shot down and mocked for it?
That's right. And then he was mocked when he went and closed down the border with China. So if but he's too tough on it, if he's too soft on it, no matter what he does.
But let's get back to that. That was about shutting down any comparison to the flu. I will go into more detail, but the coronavirus is far more similar to the flu than it's not. In fact, I'll go through this in detail. Every single symptom that the flu has, if you factor in mild cases, moderate cases, severe cases, are replicated in COVID and vice versa. There is not
pre-existing conditions. What age of people get
everything
it?
Is replicated. There is some exceptions. For example, if you're 19 years and younger, you're much safer with the COVID-19 virus than you were. But if you're 65 and older with any pre-existing high risk conditions, you're quite a bit less safe. So We can't say it's not serious because in a matter of a couple months, we've seen 45,000 deaths.
You know, what's interesting, Mike, is people try to draw this dichotomy. Either you believe in these draconian government measures or you're saying the coronavirus is a hoax. Ladies and gentlemen, you can accept the fact that the coronavirus is real and a real threat and still accept the fact that it's been exploited.
So I'm going to spend some time talking about some things to show that you don't have to have this level of fear that people have right now about the coronavirus. But before I do that, I do want to talk about the other side. Okay, so right now we're heading toward about 16% employment at the end of the month. It could be 17%. And the devastation that's about 27 million people now out of work. The devastation that we haven't heard anybody talking about it or anybody really explaining what that means. A study was done by, let me take a look at the study here. But it was the Bureau of Economic Commission, and
should I sing a song while you're looking?
Yes, the Lancet Medical Journal.
Okay,
and that's a very well-respected, widely read medical journal.
Okay,
job losses cause extreme suffering. Every 1% hike in the unemployment rate will likely produce, and this is based upon past data. This is not a model. This is based upon past experience. Will produce a 3.3% increase in drug overdoses deaths. Drug overdose deaths, and at 99%, a 0.99%, almost a 1% increase in suicides. So some people predicted getting to a 32% unemployment rate. If we got to that, just using that formula there, we would have 77,000 deaths from those two factors alone. But today, even as today, by the end of the month, we're going to see we'll have seen a 12.5% increase over the 3.5 we had prior to this. That gets us to 30-something thousand deaths from those two factors alone. Toss in alcoholism, the increase in drinking, binge drinking, and the deaths from that. Then you throw in the fact you're talking about. A spike in domestic violence and abuse, the spike in child abuse. But let's go back and talk about the suicides. Bob, Can you think of a death in the family more devastating than a suicide?
No, because along with the death and missing your loved one, there's all the guilt and the blame.
Yes.
And what could we have done differently? It's horrible.
Okay, so it's a horrible way to go. So we have to look at that. So we really are talking about real numbers and real deaths, not to mention destroyed jobs, destroyed dreams. I mean,
well, and quality of life. Do we want to live in a republic?
Quality of life,
or do we
yeah.
want to live
all right.
at the whims of some
so,
governor?
But we're not hearing about that. So that's the other thing that has to happen, is we have to start talking about this other aspect, the downside, the big, and the media's not covering it. They just are refusing to cover the downside, the actual negative impacts of the shutdown. They're 100% focused on...
You know what? Trump should go out there tomorrow and say, I care more about the coronavirus. I'm planning to never open up the economy, and then everybody will be for opening up the economy. He should use some reverse psychology.
It's not even really much of a joke, Bob. It's almost about that level.
I'm against the hydroxy glove. Okay, well, we're all for it. Yeah, just you should go down the line.
Okay, so that's something that needs to be talked about and to counter, because there is negatives on the other side. I mean, I think we're at 45,000 deaths. Now, on the other hand, we get to a state like California, we just passed 1,500 deaths in a state of 40 million people.
And Bob, yet the measures are increasing
right,
from the governor rather than decreasing.
And we now even have more data showing that there's less reason to have an increase. We now are seeing lots and lots of data. For example, New York State, they just did a study that showed a 14% antibody rate, which means, if you look at it, statewide, 14% of the people have had the virus and gone through it. In New York City, 20%. That translates to 2.7 million people in New York alone having it. In California, there was a study done in Santa Clara County. 4% of the people there had gone through the coronavirus. That translates into California to 1.6 million people. Across the country, we're talking many millions. Now, you may not remember this, but about 6 or 7 weeks ago when I was on the show here, I estimated, using some data from the CDC and some models that they had and doing a couple of assumptions, I estimated between 3 and 5 million. I believe now is on the low end of infection rate. So if we already have that infection rate out there, here's another factor. There's some 96% of prisoners out of 3,000 prisoners in the Ohio State prison system were asymptomatic, Bob, which means that a lot of the things we've been doing have been useless. We didn't know it at the time, have been useless, and continuing with some of these measures just does not make sense. What does make sense, and I think you alluded to it, is we know, and we, by the way, we've known this from the very beginning. We've known this from the first few days, that the high-risk populations are those 65 and older, those that have diabetes, severe diabetes, those that have heart conditions, those that have high blood pressure, hypertension. We know all the core morbidity factors. What we need to do is we need to extend protections to those people. But the other thing that people don't want to talk about is those people need to come forward and say, yes, I am primarily responsible myself. I don't expect the entire rest of the country to shut down so that I can walk around being treated the same as everybody else.
And they should be able to decide if they want their grandchildren to visit. I'm hearing stories of people who can't visit their mothers that are locked up in some convalescent home. And she says she's going to die of loneliness before this virus thing leaves.
Bomb. With this amount of time, there's a certain, first of all, this sounds harsh, but I don't want to be harsh, but we have to be realistic. There is a lot of people out there, older people, when they got the coronavirus, they were living day to day with other conditions. They were maybe not waking up in the next, maybe not waking up in the next week. So they died with coronavirus. They didn't die from necessarily
What's interesting is Dr. Birx has actually admitted this. She said, yes, if somebody dies and they have the virus, we mark it as dying from coronavirus, but we'll figure it all out later. Well, when's later? When our country's falling?
It's creating the fear.
See, because you can have coronavirus but not die of coronavirus, especially if it spreads that easily.
Yeah. So we need to get the facts out there on this. That segment needs to be protected. Now, I would say, like you said, so there's people out there that with grandkids, some with great-grandkids, and they've been shut away from their great-grandkids and their grandkids for this period of time, and they had a limited life expectancy anyway. Some of them have died during this period of time, never being able to see their grandkids and be with them, or their children, or their great-grandkids. So, I mean, that's another consequence of the shutdown.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this several times on this show before, and I think I mentioned to you that the lieutenant governor of Texas said, I'm about to turn 70. I'm in the high-risk group. I care about my life, but I want my grandkids to grow up in the same country I did and not some dictatorial state.
Exactly. And so with limited exceptions, people need to be able to make their own choice about what risk they want to take. Yes, if you're older and you have these conditions, you are at increased risk. Now, on the other hand, the fact that almost 2.7 million people went through the coronavirus and hardly anybody knew about it shows that...
That speaks volumes.
That means that a lot of people that were high risk also went through the coronavirus came out the other end.
That's right.
So, but people need to be able to make those decisions themselves. Now, I myself am in a probably moderate risk category. Moderate. I'd like to think I'm in the low risk category, but I'm 58. So I'm probably not, I'm not in the lowest risk category. 20 years ago, I was in a low risk category. That's a fact. And I'm not looking to run around and get the coronavirus. But on the other hand, I'm not willing to shut down all my normal interactions, normal social interactions to avoid getting it. I would, frankly, if there's some place near where I can wash my hands, I'm perfectly happy to shake hands with somebody. I'm probably still going to wash my hands afterwards.
Well, Mike, let me relieve the burden from you. You don't have to worry about your schedule. Governor Newsom will just mail it to you, and you'll have very clear instructions.
Okay. So those are the factors we have to consider on the downside there. And so let's just talk a little bit about some of the statistics that we are now seeing. So first of all, if you are 19 years and younger, basically you're close to a zero chance of dying from the coronavirus. You're far less likely to die from the coronavirus than you are if you had the flu. Now, the flu was very low too, but H1N1, that actually had a pretty big impact on kids 5 years old and younger. So this is less dangerous to children.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that every flu season, they're going to bring this stuff back again now because they have a template for it.
Yeah.
But I think next winter, the flu, shelter in place. Well,
that's the fear that could happen. In other words, instead of saying, hey, we've lived with the flu, and that's part of living in a vibrant, thriving, healthy economy and healthy country, you live with things like the flu that could go the other way. And people said, oh, my gosh, I didn't realize how bad flu was. I guess we need to do more.
Yeah.
I hope not.
And if you don't do it that way, you don't restructure capitalism into socialism, which is exactly the plan here in California and many of the states.
I mean, I do appreciate college football from a certain perspective, but I'm not. I'm just looking at there's a certain enjoyment that people get to going to a stadium full of 120,000 people all roaring for the same team. And it's different than sitting in a Petco Park where you've got half the stadium full, which I enjoy as well.
And I'm hearing Sean Hannity try to put a happy face on. Well, they'll put dummies on every other seat. You'll be there. You'll be with a mask. Wow. How do you even drink your Coca-Cola with that, Sean?
Once again, there is some folks that have not figured it out yet that you would hope they would. Sean is one of them, Hannity. And also Greg Gumbold. He's still tweeting this.
He'll at least go back and forth, though. He speaks out against the draconian measures.
He does, but he still thinks, for example, he thought the protesters were wrong.
Yeah, I know he did, and I usually like Gutfeld and respect what he says. I still like him as a person. I disagree with him. There is a silver lining, Mike. You know that whenever we ride on airplanes now, none of us will be flying coach. We'll all be in first class because that's the only place where you have a great big seat all by yourself. First class for everybody. It's going to be great.
So we do need to get the word out on this. So here's the bottom line. If you're between 18 and 45, the chances of dying from the coronavirus is 11 out of 100,000. Just to put that in perspective, driving your car for a year, normal commuting distances, your chances of dying are twice that, 22 out of 100,000. These are really low numbers that no person, you can't live your life without being able to willingly to tolerate these kind of numbers. They're nothing. So for that prime age working group, the chances are almost nothing. So this group, and then from there, from 45 on up, it starts to gradually increase, and it's different for everybody. But by the time if you're 55 and you're in good health, your risk is still low. If you're 65 and good health, your risk is still low. It is.
Well, Mike, as always, you come with a lot of fresh perspective and good data. Ladies and gentlemen, we may only be part of that 25% here in California, but we'll continue to speak the truth anyway. We'll get through this, and I will see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.